The BBC third program. We present Ralph Richardson as Professor Arnold Rubeck and Irene Wirth as Irena in When We Dead Awaken, a dramatic epilogue by Henrik Ibsen, translated from the Norwegian by Michael Mayer, with Barbara Jefford as Maya and Gordon Jackson as Ulfheim. When We Dead Awaken.
Outside the Spa Hotel at a watering place on the Norwegian coast. It is an open, park-like space with fountains, shrubs, and clumps of large old trees. On the left stands a little pavilion covered with ivy and wild vine. In the background is the fjord stretching right out to sea with tongues of land and small islets in the distance. It is a still, hot summer morning. Professor Rubeck and his wife, Maya, are seated in basket chairs beside a laid table on the lawn outside the hotel. They have just lunched. Now they are drinking champagne and seltzer, and each has a newspaper.
Well, Maya, what's the matter with you?
Just listen to the silence.
Can you hear it?
Hear what?
The silence.
I certainly can.
Perhaps you're right, my dear. One really can hear the silence.
Oh, God knows one can, when it's as deafening as it is here.
Here at the hotel, you mean?
Everywhere in Norway. Oh, down in the city it was noisy enough, but even there I thought all that noise and bustle had something dead about it.
Aren't you happy to be home again, Maya?
Are you?
I?
Yes. Well, you've been abroad so much, much longer than I. Are you really happy to be home again?
No, to be perfectly honest, not really happy.
There, you see, I knew it.
Perhaps I have been abroad too long. This northern provincial life seems foreign to me.
Let's go away again, as quickly as possible.
Well, we are going, Maya, you know that. Well,
why not now, right away? We could be so comfortable there in our lovely new house.
Shouldn't you rather say our lovely new home?
I prefer to say house. Let's use that word.
You're a funny little creature, really.
Am I so funny?
I think so.
Why? Because I don't want to stay pottering around up here.
Who was it? Was so insistent that we should come north this summer?
I suppose it was I.
Well, it certainly wasn't I.
Oh, but good God, how could I have known everything would have changed so dreadfully? And in such a short time. I mean, it's only just 4 years since I went away.
Since you got married, you mean?
Married? What's that got to do with it?
Since you became Mrs. Arnold Rubeck, mistress of a beautiful home. Oh, I beg your pardon. I should have said a handsome house. In a villa on the Taunitsa Zee, surrounded by all the best people. It is very fine and handsome, Maya, there's no denying that, and very spacious. You don't have to sit in each other's laps all the time.
No, we've got all the room we need.
Exactly. You've grown used to a more spacious and luxurious way of life, and a more gracious society than you've been accustomed to at home.
Oh, so you think it's I who've changed?
Yes, Maya, I do.
Not the people here?
Oh, yes, they've changed too a little, no doubt. And not for the better. That I'm prepared to concede.
I'm glad to hear it.
Maya, do you know what I'm reminded of when I look at the people here and the way they live?
No, what?
Reminds me of that night we spent on the train. And we were coming up from the continent.
You were asleep the whole time.
Not the whole time. I noticed how silent it was at all the little places we stopped at. I heard the silence, like you, Maya. And then I realized we'd crossed the frontier. Now we were at home. I knew it because at every one of those little roadside halts, the train stopped and stood quite still, though nothing ever happened.
Why did it stop if there was no one there?
Don't know. No one got off, no one got on. But the train stood there, absolutely silent, for minute after minute, as it might have been eternity. At every station I heard two men walking down the platform. One of them had a lantern in his hand, and they muttered to each other, softly, tonelessly, meaninglessly in the night.
Yes, you're right. There are always two men who walk and talk together.
About nothing. Never mind. You're going to wait until tomorrow, when the great steamer will come into the harbour and we'll go on board and sail along the coast northward as far as we can go, right up to the Arctic.
Yes, but then you won't see anything of the country and the people, and that's what you came for.
I've seen more than enough.
Do you think a sea voyage will be better for you?
Well, it's always a change.
All right, if you think it'll be good for you.
Good for me. For me. Nothing the matter with me.
Yes, there is, Rubeck, and you know it.
My dear, what should be the matter with me?
You tell me. You've begun to wander around restlessly as though you couldn't find peace at home or anywhere else. And you've begun to avoid people lately.
You've noticed that?
Oh, no one who knows you could help noticing it. And I think it's such a pity you've lost your passion for work.
That too?
Well, you used to work all the time, day and night.
Used to.
But ever since you finished your masterpiece...
Perhaps that's where it began to go wrong.
What do you mean?
When I completed my masterpiece. The Day of Resurrection is a masterpiece. Or was when I first... No. It still is. It must be a masterpiece.
Yes, Rubeck, the whole world knows that.
The world knows nothing. It understands nothing.
Well, at least they can sense something.
Something that isn't there. Oh, yes. Something I've never imagined. And that's what they all go mad about. What's the use of working myself to death to please them?
Oh, are you better occupied nowadays churning out these portrait busts? Do you really think they're worthy of you?
They're not ordinary portrait busts, my...
Oh, yes, they are. These last 2 or 3 years, ever since you got that big group finished and out of the house...
Nevertheless, they're not ordinary portraits. Believe me.
What are they, then?
There's something hidden within those faces. A secret meaning which people cannot see.
Oh, really?
Only I see it. I find it intensely amusing. Superficially, there are these striking likenesses, as they call them, at which people gape entranced. Deep within, I've sculpted the righteous and estimable faces of horses, the opinionated muzzles of donkeys, the lop ears and shallow brows of dogs, the overgorged chaps of swine, and the dull and brutalized fronts of oxen.
All nice domestic animals, poor dears.
Just nice domestic animals, Maya. All the animals which man has corrupted in his own image, and which have corrupted him in return. These disingenuous works of art, of which our honest burghers commission from me and pay for in good faith and solid cash, oh, they're almost literally worth their weight in gold.
Oh, shame on you, Rubeck. Here, drink some more champagne. Be happy.
I am happy, Maya. Really happy. In a way. I mean, there's a certain happiness in feeling absolutely free and independent, in having everything one could possibly wish for. Everything material, I mean. Don't you agree, Maria?
Oh, yes, I suppose so. It's not to be despised. But do you remember what you promised me that day when we agreed on this arrangement?
Agreed that we two should marry? It was a little difficult for you, wasn't it, Maya?
And I was to go abroad with you and stay there and enjoy myself always. Can you remember what you promised me then?
I'll be damned if I can. What did I promise you?
You said you would take me with you to the top of a high mountain and show me all the glory of the world.
I promised that to you, too.
Me, too? Who else?
No. I only meant, did I promise to show you...
All the glory of the world. Yes, that's what you said. And all the glory was to be mine and yours, you said.
It was a phrase I used to be fond of.
Only a phrase?
Yes, from my school days. I used to say it to the other children when I wanted to get them to come up and play with me in the forest or up in the mountains.
Perhaps that was all you wanted me for, to play games with.
Well, it's been quite an enjoyable game, hasn't it, Maya?
I didn't go away with you just to play games.
No, I dare say not.
And you never took me with you up any mountain to show me the...
All the glory of the world... No, I didn't. Fact is, little Maya, you're not exactly made to climb mountains.
You seem to think I was once.
4 or 5 years ago. 4 or 5 years. It's a long, long time, Maya.
Has it seemed so long to you, Rubeck?
Begins to seem a little long now. That's not it.
Well, I won't bore you any longer.
Is the Frau Professor offended?
Not in the least.
May I have the honor to wish you a good morning, madam? Good morning, Professor.
Good morning, Inspector.
May I inquire whether you spent a good night, madam?
Thank you, yes, excellent. As far as I'm concerned, I always sleep like a log.
I'm delighted to hear it. One's first night in a strange bed can sometimes be a trying experience. And you, Professor?
Oh, I always sleep badly, especially recently.
Ah, I'm sorry to hear that. But a few weeks here with us and things will be different.
Tell me, Inspector, have you a patient who's in the habit of bathing at night?
At night? No, I've never heard of such a thing.
You haven't?
No, I don't know of anyone here who's so ill as to require that.
Well, is there someone who takes a nightly walk in the park?
No, Professor, that would be against the regulations.
Oh, for heaven's sake, Rubeck, I told you this morning you've been dreaming.
Really, have I? Thank you. Inspector, it so happens I couldn't sleep last night, so I got up. Wanted to see what kind of night it was.
Yes, Professor.
So I looked out of the window, saw a figure dressed in white over there among the trees.
And the Professor says this figure was wearing a bathing dress.
Something of the sort, I said. I couldn't see closely enough. I'd only tell it was something white.
Most remarkable. Was it a gentleman or a lady?
A lady, I'm almost sure. But behind her walked another figure, and this second figure was quite dark, like a shadow.
A dark figure? Was it black?
Yes, it appeared so to me.
And it walked behind the white figure, close behind her?
Yes, a little way behind.
Ah, then I may be able to explain this mystery for you, Professor.
Well, tell
you
me.
You mean he wasn't dreaming after all?
Shh. Professor, look over there. Lower your voices for a moment, please. Look. The lady dressed in white.
And a woman in black. A nun. Or is she herself?
Shh. It's all right. They've gone now.
Who was that lady?
A visitor who's rented that little pavilion over there.
Is she foreign?
I think she must be. They arrived here from abroad anyway, about a week ago. They've never been here before.
She's the one I saw in the park last night.
It must have been. The thought occurred to me at once.
What is the lady's name, Inspector?
She registered as Madame de Sartoff and Companion. That's all we know.
Sartoff, Sartoff.
Do you know anyone of that name, Rubeck?
Oh, no, no one. Sartoff. That sounds Russian or Slavonic anyway. What language does she speak?
When the two ladies talk together, they use a language I don't understand. But at other times, she speaks good, honest Norwegian.
Norwegian? Are you sure you're not mistaken?
How could I be? I've talked to her several times. Only a few words. She's very reticent, but...
But she spoke Norwegian.
Good, pure Norwegian. Possibly with a slight northern intonation.
That, too.
Perhaps the lady's been your model at some time, Rubeck. Think back now.
Model?
Yes. When you were young. Well, think of all those models you used to have. In the old days, I mean.
No, little Maya, to tell the truth, I've only ever had one model. Only one for everything I have created.
I'm afraid I must ask you to excuse me now. I see someone coming whom I'd rather not speak to. Especially when a lady is present.
Who's he? Who's the hunter?
That is Squire Ulfheim from...
Oh! Squire Oldham.
The bear baiter, they call him.
I know him.
Yes. Who doesn't?
Only slightly. Has he come here for treatment at
no,
last?
No, no, surprisingly enough, not yet. He just passes through once a year on his way up to his hunting grounds. Please excuse me.
Wait a minute, damn your eyes. Why do you always scuttle away when I come?
I was not scuttling, Squire Ulf.
Now, what kind of a way is that to receive visitors, eh? Running away with your tail between your legs as though the devil was in your heels?
Have you, come with the steamer, sir?
Ain't had the pleasure of seeing any damn steamer. Don't you know I always sail in my own cutter? Lars, take good care of your fellow creatures. Keep them ravenous, though. Fresh meat bones, but not too much meat in the mind. And be sure it's reeking raw with plenty of blood in it. And get something in your own belly, too. Or get the hell out of here.
Won't you go into the restaurant, sir?
But among all those dead flies and half-dead people, no thank you, Inspector.
Well, just as you please.
Just get the housekeeper to fix me up as usual. No stinting with the food, mind. And bring out your best aquavit. You can tell her that I, or Lars, will come and put the fear of God into her if she doesn't.
We know that from your previous visits. Can I tell the waiter to bring you anything, Professor? Or something for Mrs. Rubeck, perhaps?
No, thank you. Nothing for me.
Nor for me.
Very good. Now you really... really must excuse me.
Death and damnation. This is fine company for a yokel like me to stray into.
I beg your pardon?
Isn't it Master Carver Rubeck himself?
We met once or twice socially last autumn I spent in this country.
Yes, but that was years ago. And you weren't as famous then as I hear you've become now. So that in those days even a dufty bear baiter dared to come within range of you.
Well, I don't bite, even now.
Do you really hunt bears?
Bears for choice, ma'am. You don't mind if I sit down?
But if they're not to be had, I'll take any wild thing that crosses my path. Eagles, wolves, women, elks, reindeer. As long as it's fresh and juicy and has good red blood in its veins.
But bears for choice.
For choice, yes. If they give any trouble, you can use your knife. We both like tough material to work on, your husband and I. He struggles with his blocks of marble, I suppose it'd be, and I with a bear. And both of us conquer our material in the end, make ourselves masters over it. We don't give up till we've brought it to heel, however strongly it resists us.
There's truth in that.
Yes, high up in the mountains. I dare say you've never been up to the top of a mountain, Mrs. Rubeck.
No, never.
Death and damnation, then make sure you go up this summer. Come along with me. I'll take you both, gladly.
Thank you, but my husband is thinking of going on a sea voyage this summer.
Only along the coast, among the islands.
Why the devil do you want to waste your time in those tepid gutters? I never heard of such an idea. Frittering away the summer in that ditch water. Ditch water, I call it.
Do you hear that, Rubeck?
Now, come with me up to the mountains. It's clean up there. No people. You can't imagine what that means to me. But a little lady like you, Mrs. There's that nun again. Look at her, eh? That black crow. Who's going to be buried today, Professor, eh?
No one that I know of.
Well, then someone must be at death's door. People who don't know how to keep themselves healthy ought to have the decency to get themselves buried and not waste time about it.
Have you never been ill, Squire Ulfheim?
Never. If I had, I wouldn't be sitting here. Some of my best friends have, though.
And what did you do for them?
I shot them, of course.
Shot them?
Shot them dead?
I never miss, ma'am.
But what could induce you to kill human beings?
Who's been talking about human beings?
Well, you said your best friends.
I was referring to my dogs.
Are they your closest friends?
None closer. Fine sense of honor. Never let you down. 100% loyal. Grand sportsman. As soon as one of them turns sick or starts to mope, bang! Off he goes into the next world. Here she comes again. The black crow. Look at what she's carrying. Call that food for human consumption, watered milk and soft, mushy bread. And you ought to see my fellows eat. Would you like to see them?
Yes, I'd love to.
Spoken like a woman of spirit, ma'am. Come with me, then. Great red meat bones. They swallow them whole, cough them up, and then gulp them down again. Does your heart good to watch them? Come along, and I'll show them to you.
Right.
And we'll talk some more about this trip up into the mountains.
As they go, the strange lady dressed in white comes out of the small pavilion and goes to the table where the nun has put down food for her. Rubeck rises and crosses over to her.
I recognize you, Irena.
You've guessed, have you, Arnold?
And you recognize me too, I see.
That's different.
Why is it different?
You're still alive.
Alive?
Who was the other person, the one you had with you at the table?
That was my wife.
Indeed. Good, Arnold. No concern of mine, then.
No, of course not.
Someone you found after I died.
After you? How do you mean?
And the child. Our child is well. It has survived me and become famous and honored.
Our child. Yes, that's what we called it. Yes, Irene, our child has become famous all over the world. You've read about it, I suppose.
And has made its father famous. That was your dream.
I owe everything to you. Everything. Thank you.
If I had done as I should have done, Arnold.
Yes?
I should have killed that child.
Killed it, did you say?
Killed it before I left you. Smashed it. Smashed it to pieces.
You could never have done that. You wouldn't have had the heart.
No, I hadn't that kind of heart then.
But afterwards?
Since then, I have killed it 1,000 times. In the daylight and in the dark. Killed it in hatred and revenge and agony.
Tell me now, after all these years, why did you leave me? Vanish without a trace, nowhere to be found.
Oh, Arnold, why should I tell you that now, when I'm dead?
Was there someone else you had fallen in love with?
There was someone who had no use for my love or my life any longer.
Let's not talk any more about the past. Let us sit. Where have you been, Elena? All my efforts to find you came to nothing.
I passed into the darkness while our child stood transfigured in the light.
Have you traveled?
Yes, traveled through many countries.
And what have you been doing, Elena?
Well, now let me think. I have stood like a statue, naked on a revolving platform in music halls. Made a lot of money. That was something I'd never done when I was with you, because you hadn't any. And I've been with men whom I could drive crazy. That was something I'd never been able to do to you, Arnold. You had such self-control.
You married two, didn't you?
Yes, I married one of them.
Who was your husband?
He was a South American diplomat. It drove him crazy. He went mad. Incurably, hopelessly mad. It was amusing while it lasted.
Where is he now?
In a graveyard somewhere, with a fine big monument over him and a lead bullet rattling in his skull.
Did he kill himself?
Yes. He was kind enough to save me the trouble.
Aren't you sorry he's dead, Irena?
Sorry? Who's dead?
Von Sartov.
He wasn't called Sartov?
No.
My second husband's name is Sartov. He's Russian.
Where is he?
Oh, far away in the Ural Mountains among his gold mines.
He lives there?
Lives. I think I've killed him, too.
Killed
him with a fine, sharp dagger I always take to bed with me.
I don't believe you, Irena.
It's true, Arnold, I promise you.
Have you never had any children?
Yes, I have had many children.
And where are they now?
I killed them.
Now you're lying to me again.
I killed them, I tell you, without a moment's pity, as soon as they entered the world. No, long, long before that. One after the other.
There's another meaning in everything you say.
I can't help it. Every word I say to you is whispered in my ear.
I think I'm the only person who can guess that meaning.
You should be the only one.
Some string inside you has broken.
Doesn't that always happen when someone dies?
Oh, Irena, forget these wild ideas. You're alive. Alive. Alive.
I was dead for many years. They came and tied me up. They tied my arms together behind my back. And then they lowered me into a tomb, with iron bars across the door and padded walls so that no one up above could hear the shrieks of the dead. But now, slowly, I am beginning to rise from the dead.
Do you blame me for this? Do you hold me guilty?
Yes.
Guilty of your death, as you call it?
Guilty of leaving me no future but death.
Look, Irena, we two are sitting together as we used to in the old days.
A little apart as in the old days.
That's how it had to be then.
Had to?
There had to be a distance between us.
Was it so necessary, Arnold?
Do you remember what you said when I asked you if you would leave home and come with me out into the world?
I promised that I would go with you to the end of the world and to the end of life. And that I would serve you in all things.
As a model for my work.
Free and naked.
And you did serve me, Irena, joyfully, gladly, unstintingly.
Yes. With all the trembling blood of my youth.
Too true you did.
I knelt down at your feet and served you, Arnold. But you.
I never wronged you. Never, Irena.
Yes, you did. You wronged my inmost being.
I?
Yes, you. I stripped myself naked for you to gaze at me. And you never once touched me.
Irena, don't you understand that your beauty often drove me almost out of my mind?
And yet if you had touched me, I think I would have killed you on the spot. I had a sharp needle always with me. I hid it in my hair. Yes, but... No. How could you?
I was an artist, Irena.
An artist, yes.
Before all else, I was an artist. And I was sick with a longing to create the one great work of my life, which was to be called the Day of Resurrection. I conceived it in the likeness of a young woman, awakening from the sleep of death.
Our child, yes.
She, this awakening girl, was to be all that is noble, all that is pure, perfection in woman. And then I found you. In you I saw all the things I wanted to express. And you agreed so gladly, so willingly. You left your family and your home and came with me.
When you took me away, I felt just as though I'd become a child again.
That is why I was able to use you. You and no one else. To me, it was something sacred and untouchable, fit only to be worshipped. I was still young then, Irena. I was convinced that if I touched you, if I desired you sensually, my vision would be profane so that I would never be able to achieve what I was striving after. I still think there was some truth in that.
The child of the mind first. The child of the body second.
Condemn me if you will. But I was so completely dominated by my task. And so exultantly happy in it.
And you accomplished your task, Arnold.
Thanks to you, bless you, yes, I accomplished my task. I wanted to create woman as she will appear when she wakes, pure and undefiled on the day of resurrection. Not marveling at what is new, the unknown, the unimagined, but filled with a holy joy at finding herself unchanged, she, a mortal woman, in the higher, freer, happier kingdom after a long and dreamless sleep of death. That is how I created her. I created her in your image, Irena.
And then you were finished with me.
Irena.
You had no further use for me.
How can you say that?
You began to look round for other ideals to inspire you.
I found none after you.
No other models, Arnold?
You were not a model to me. You were my inspiration.
What have you created since then? In marble, I mean, since the day I left you.
Nothing. I wasted the years in carving trivialities.
And the woman you're living with now?
Don't speak of her now.
Where do you intend to go with her?
On a long, tedious trip up north along the coast.
Go high up into the mountains, Arnold. As high as you can go. Higher, higher, always higher.
Are you going up there?
Dare you meet me again?
If only we could. Ah, if only we could.
Why shouldn't we, if we want to? Come. Come, Arnold. Oh, please, come up to me.
You can say what you like, Rubek, but...
Oh, excuse me. You've made a new acquaintance, I see.
I have renewed an old acquaintance. What were you saying?
I was saying, you may do as you like, but I am not going with you on that awful steamer.
Why not?
I want to go up into the mountains and the forests. Oh, I'd so love to. Oh, you must let me, Rubek. I'll be so good if you do.
Who's given you these ideas?
He, that horrible man who kills bears. Oh, you can't imagine what extraordinary things he's been telling me about the mountains and the life up there.
He's been making up the most horrible and frightening stories. I'm sure they're only stories, but somehow he makes it all sound wonderfully attractive. Oh, may I go up there with him, just to see if all he says is true? May I, Rubek?
Go by all means, as far as I'm concerned. Yes, go up into the mountains, go as far as you please, stay as long as you please. I may possibly be going up there myself.
Oh, no, you needn't trouble to come. Not for my sake.
Ah, but I want to go up into the mountains. I've made up my mind to it now.
Oh, thank you. May I run and tell him at once?
Tell him anything you like.
Oh, thank you. Oh, how sweet and kind you are today, Rubek.
Shall we meet up there, then?
Yes, we shall meet up there. I've been looking for you for such a long time.
When did you begin to look for me, Irena?
From the moment I realized I'd given you something I couldn't do without, Arnold, something one should never part with.
Yes, that is true. You gave me 4 years of your youth.
More. I gave you much more than that. I was too prodigal.
Yes, you were prodigal, Irena. All your naked beauty you gave me.
To gaze at.
And immortalize.
For your own glory. And for the child.
For you too, Irena.
You've forgotten the most precious gift I gave you.
The most precious? What gift was that?
I gave you my soul. Young and alive. And left myself empty. Soulless. Don't you see? That's why I died, Arnold. I must go.
But, Irena. Irena.
A mountain health resort. The landscape of vast treeless plateaus stretches away towards a long mountain lake. Beyond the lake towers a range of mountain peaks with bluish snow in their crevices. A stream, divided into rivulets, ripples down a steep wall of rock and flows out smoothly across the plateau. The stream is lined with brushwood, plants, and boulders. There is a small hillock with a stone bench on its top. In the distance, beyond the stream, a number of small children sing, dance, and play. It is a summer evening, just before sundown.
Hello! 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 Oh, I've been looking for you everywhere, Rubek.
You come from the hotel?
Yes, a moment ago. Ugh, that fly trap.
You didn't come down for lunch, I noticed.
No, we had ours in the open, under the sky.
We? Who are we?
I am... And that awful bear baiter.
Oh, him.
Yes. And tomorrow we're going out again, at dawn.
After bears?
Yes, off to kill Bruin.
You found any tracks?
One doesn't find bears as high up as this, didn't you know?
Where, then?
Well, far down. Down in the valleys where the forests are thickest, where people from the towns can't go.
You two are going down there tomorrow?
Yes, that's what we've decided. We may even go this evening, if you've no objection.
I? Nope. Far from it.
Lars, his servant, will be coming with us, of course, with the pack.
I'm not interested in Mr. Lars and his pack. Won't you come and sit here beside me?
No, thank you. Oh, I'd rather be in this soft heather here.
I can see you're tired.
I think I'm beginning to be.
Always comes afterwards, when the excitement's over.
Yes. I think I'll close my eyes. Oh, Rubek, how can you bear to sit here and listen to those children yelling and watch them jumping around?
There's a kind of a harmony in their movements, almost like music. But isolated moments among all the clumsiness. It amuses me to sit and wait for those moments.
Always the artist, aren't you?
Yes, please God.
There's nothing artistic about him.
About whom?
Him, you know.
The bear baiter, you mean?
Yes. Nothing artistic about him. Nothing at all.
I don't doubt that for a moment.
And he's so ugly. So ugly. So ugly.
Is that why you're so delighted to be going off with him into the forest?
I don't know. You're ugly too, Rubek.
Have you only just discovered that?
No, I've noticed it for a long time.
One grows older, one grows older, Maya.
I don't mean that. There's something so tired about your eyes when you deign to look at me, which isn't often.
You've noticed that, have you?
Little by little, a kind of evil expression has crept into them. Almost as though you were plotting something against me.
Really? Come here and sit beside me, Maya. Let us have a little talk.
May I sit on your knee, then, like I used to?
No, you mustn't do that. People can see us from the hotel. Come and sit here on the bench beside me.
No, thanks. In that case, I'd rather stay where I am in the heather. I can hear you quite well from here. Well, what was it you wanted to talk about?
What do you think was my real reason for agreeing to make this trip to Norway?
Well, you said, among other things, that it'd be so good for me. But now I don't believe that was the real reason.
Well, what do you think the reason was?
I think it was because of that pale lady.
Mrs. von Sartoff.
Yes, the one who follows us round all the time. Yesterday evening she turned up here, too. Yeah.
But why on earth should that...
Well, you knew her very well, didn't you? Long before you knew me.
I've forgotten her, too. Long before I knew you.
Do you forget so quickly, Rubek?
Very quickly. When I want to.
Even someone who's been your model.
When I no longer have any use for her.
A woman who stripped herself naked for you.
That means nothing, nothing to us artists. Besides, how, if I venture to ask, could I possibly have guessed that she was in this part of the country?
You could have read her name in a visitor's list, in a newspaper.
Yes, but I didn't even know the name she uses now. I'd never even heard of von Sartoff.
Oh, Lord, well, I suppose you must have had some other reason for wanting to come here then.
Yes, Maya, I had another reason. Quite a different reason. And that's what we've got to talk about sooner or later.
Lord, how solemn you look. You're beginning to make me curious, Rubek.
Not worried?
Not in the least.
Good. Then listen. You said that day down at the spa that you thought I'd become very nervous these past months.
Yes, so you have.
And why do you suppose that is?
How should I know? Perhaps you've grown tired of being continually together with me.
Continually?
Yes. We've lived together down there for 5 whole years, just the two of us, and have hardly ever been away from each other for an hour. Just we two, all by ourselves.
Well...
You don't like being with people, Rubek. You prefer to be by yourself and think your own thoughts. And I can't talk properly to you about what interests you, about art and all that. God knows I don't care very much for it either.
Poor Maya. So we spend most of our time sitting by the fire and talking about your interests.
Oh, Lord, I've no interests to talk about.
Well, perhaps they are rather trivial. Still, time passes, Maya. Time passes.
True enough. Time passes. It's running away from you, Rubek. I suppose it's that makes you so uneasy.
Yes. And so restless. No. I can't stand this miserable life much longer.
If you want to be rid of me, just say so.
What on earth are you talking about? Be rid of you?
Yes. If you want to be finished with me, say so straight out and I'll go at once.
You and I can't possibly go on living this kind of life together.
Well, then, obviously.
There's no then, obviously, about it. Because we two can't go on living together as we are, it doesn't necessarily follow that we have to get divorced.
Just separate, you mean?
That isn't necessary either.
Well, out with it. What do you want to do with me, then?
What I feel so keenly, almost painfully... is the need of someone who is really close to me.
Aren't I, Rubek?
Not in that way. I must live with someone who can make me complete, supply what's missing in me. Someone who is one with me in everything I strive for.
Yes. In big things like that, I can't be of any help to you. And God knows I haven't any desire to be either.
I know that only too well. That isn't what I had in mind when I married you.
I can see you're thinking of someone else.
Indeed. I didn't know you were clairvoyant.
Oh, I know you so well, Rubek, too well.
But perhaps you can also see of whom I'm thinking.
Indeed I can.
Well,
Please tell me.
You're thinking of that model you once used. You know, the people down at the hotel think she's mad.
Oh? What do the people down at the hotel think about you and your friend the bear beta?
That has nothing to do with it. It is that pale lady you're thinking of, isn't it?
Exactly. Of her. I thought I no longer had any use for her. And anyway, she left me. Vanished. Just like that.
You took me as a kind of makeshift?
More or less, yes, to be quite frank, my dear. For a year or 18 months, I've been alone, brooding in solitude. I'd put the final touches to my work. Resurrection was exhibited all over the world. It brought me fame, all the glory I could wish for. But I no longer loved my own work. Flowers and incense that were showered on me nauseated me, drove me to despair, so that I wanted to flee into the depths of the forest. Then, you know what I did?
Yes. You decided to do portrait busts of ladies and gentlemen.
On commission, with animal faces behind the masks. They got them thrown in, free, gratis. But that isn't what I mean.
Well, what do you mean?
I mean, it came to me then that all this talk about the task of an artist and the vocation of an artist was empty, hollow, and meaningless.
But what would you have put in its place?
Life, Maya.
Life?
Yes. I thought that life in sunshine and beauty was worth far more than wasting one's years in a raw, damp cellar, wearing oneself to death, wrestling with lumps of clay and blocks of stone.
Yes, I've always thought so, too.
So then I became rich. Rich enough to live in luxury and the idle sunlight, to build myself a villa on the Taunitsa Zee, and a mansion in the capital, and all the rest of it.
And to cap it all, you could afford to buy me, and gave me leave to share your wealth with you.
Didn't I promise to take you with me up a high mountain and show you all the glory of the world?
You may have brought me up quite a high mountain, Rubek, but you haven't showed me all the glory of the world.
How impossible you are to please, Maya. Quite impossible. But can you guess what really has driven me to despair?
Yes. The fact that you've tied yourself to me for life.
I wouldn't have put it quite so heartless.
That doesn't make the thought less heartless.
Don't understand what really goes on in an artist's mind.
Oh, good heavens, I haven't the faintest idea what goes on inside my own mind.
I live so fast, Maya. We live like that, we artists. I've lived through a whole lifetime in the few years we two have known each other. And I've come to realize that it's not within my power to find happiness in idleness and soft living. Life is not shaped like that for me and my kind. I must go on working, creating incessantly until I die. That's why I can't go on with you any longer, Maya. Just you and I.
Does that mean, in plain words, that you've grown tired of me?
Yes, that's what it means. I've grown bored, intolerably bored and tired of living with you. It's drained all my vitality. Now you know. These are hard and ugly words. I know that well. You're not to blame, I admit that willingly. It's only in me that this change, this revolution has occurred. This awakening to the life that is really mine.
Well, why in God's name can't we part then?
Would you be willing?
Yes, if there's no alternative.
But there is an alternative. There is a way.
Now you're thinking of that pale lady again.
Yes, to be honest, my thoughts always return to her. Ever since I met her again, I want to tell you a secret, Maya.
Well?
In here, Maya, in my breast, I keep a small casket with a lock that cannot be picked. In that casket, all my visions lie. When she left me and vanished from my life, the lock of that casket snapped shut. She had the key, and she took it with her. You, my poor Maya, you had no key. So everything in it lies unused. And the years passed, and all that wealth lies there, and I cannot touch it.
Then get her to unlock it for you.
Maya.
Here she is. No doubt it's because of this little casket that she's been following us.
I never mentioned a word of this to her. Never.
But, my dear Rubek, is it worth making all this fuss and bother about such a simple matter?
You call this a simple matter?
Well, certainly I do. You go to whoever you need the most. I shall always be able to find somewhere.
Where?
Well, I could move out to the villa if necessary. But it won't be. Our townhouse is very large. With a little give and take, there should be room enough in it for three.
Do you think that could work in the long run?
Lord, if it doesn't work, it doesn't. We won't get any further by discussing it.
But what shall we do if it doesn't work, Maya?
Then you and I will simply go different ways. Part. I shall find something new somewhere. A place where I can be free. 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 Oh, you needn't worry about me, Professor Rubek. Look. There she is.
Where?
Over there, pacing along like a statue. She's coming this way.
Isn't she the incarnate image of your resurrection? Why did I ever let her go? Drive her into the darkness, change her into a fool that I was. Fool.
What does all that mean?
Nothing. Nothing that you would understand.
Go down and talk to her, Rubek. Alone.
Where will you go?
From now on, I shall go my own way. Professor Rubek is up there, waiting for you, madam.
What does he want?
He wants you to help him open a casket which is jammed shut.
Can I help him with that?
He says you're the only person who can.
Then I'd better try.
Yes. Do, madam. Please do.
She said you've been waiting for me.
I have been waiting for you. For years. Without knowing it.
I couldn't come to you, Arnold. I was lying down there, asleep. A long, deep sleep, full of dreams.
Ah, but now you have awakened, Irena.
The sleep is heavy in my eyes still.
The day will dawn, the sun will shine for both of us. You will see.
Never believe that.
Do believe it, I know it. Now I have found you again.
Risen?
Transfigured.
Only risen, Arnold, not transfigured. Let us sit down.
Where have you been all day, Irena?
Far away. In the dead country, yonder.
You haven't your friend with you today, I see.
My friend keeps a close watch on me all the time.
How can she?
Oh, she can, wherever I go. She never lets me out of her sight. Until one fine sunny morning, I shall kill her.
Do you want to kill her?
Oh, yes. If only I could.
Why?
Because she's a witch. Do you know, Arnold, she's turned herself into my shadow.
Well, we all have to have a shadow.
I am my own shadow. Can't you understand that?
Yes, Irena. I understand.
Why do you sit there with your eyes turned away from me?
I dare not look at you.
Why don't you dare to look at me any longer?
You have a shadow that torments you, and I are conscious.
Ah, oh, at last.
Irena, what is it?
It's all right. Now they let go of me, for a moment anyway. Now we can sit down and talk as we used to.
If only we could talk as we used to.
I am here, sitting beside him. Now I have come back to you from a far country, Arnold.
Yes, from an endless journey.
Come home to my lord and master.
To ourselves. To our own selves, Irena.
Have you waited for me every day?
How could I dare to wait for you?
No, I don't suppose you did. You never understood a thing.
Was it really not for someone else that you disappeared so suddenly?
Couldn't it have been for you, Arnold?
But I don't understand.
When I had served you with my soul and my body, and the sculpture stood there finished, our child, as you called it, I laid at your feet the dearest sacrifice I could offer. I blotted myself out forever.
And left my life a desert.
Exactly. I wasn't going to allow you to create again, ever. Once you had created this child of ours, our only child.
Was it jealousy that made you do this?
No. Hatred, I think.
Hatred? Hatred of me?
Yes, of you. Of the artist who lightly and casually took a warm, living body, a young human life, and tore the soul from it because you needed it to create a work of art.
You say that? You who shared my work so ardently with such a high, holy passion? That work for which we met each morning as for an act of devotion?
There is one thing I must tell you, Arnold. Yes. I never loved your work before I met you, nor afterwards.
But the artist, Irena...
I hate the artist.
The artist in me, too?
Most of all in you. When I stripped myself naked and stood there before you, I hated you, Arnold.
That's not true, Irena. You didn't.
I hated you because you could stand there so unmoved.
Unmoved.
So intolerably in control of yourself, then. And because you were an artist, only an artist, not a man. But that statue of wet and living clay, her I loved as she rose out of that raw and formless mass, a human child with a soul. She was our creation, our child with a soul, mine and yours.
It was, in spirit and in truth.
It's for our child that I've made this long pilgrimage.
For that marble image.
Oh, call it what you will, I call it our child.
And now you want to see it, finished. In marble, which you always said was so cold. Perhaps you do not know that it now stands far away in a great museum.
I heard a story to that effect.
You always hated museums. You called them tombs.
I want to make a pilgrimage to the place where my soul and the child of my soul lie buried.
You must never see that statue again. Do you hear, Irena? I beg you, never, never see it again.
You think that I would die a second time?
I don't know what I think. How could I ever have known you would have become so obsessed with the statue? You who left me before it was complete?
It was complete. That was why I was able to leave you. Leave you alone.
In the end, it changed. Became different, Irena.
Arnold, have you harmed our child?
Harmed? I'm not sure what you would call it.
What have you done?
I'll tell you. If you promise to sit and listen calmly. And you mustn't look at me while I tell you.
I promise. Now tell me.
When I found you, I knew at once how I should use you. You were to be my masterpiece. I was young then, with no experience of life. I envisaged resurrection as something perfect and beautiful. A pure young girl, unstained by life, awakening to the light and glory without having to free herself from anything ugly or unclean.
And that is how I stand there now?
Not quite like that.
Not quite? Don't I stand there as I always stood before you?
In the years after you left me, I gained experience and knowledge. I began to envisage the day of resurrection as something bigger, something more complex. That small, round pedestal in which your statue stood erect and lonely, that was no longer big enough to hold all that I now wanted to express.
Well, go on.
I portrayed what I saw with my own eyes in the world around me. I had to. I had no choice, Irena. I enlarged the pedestal. I made it broad and spacious. On it I set a small lump of our curled and fissured earth. And out of the fissure swarmed people with faces of beasts beneath their human masks. Women and men as I knew them from life.
But in the middle of the throng, the young woman stands with the light of happiness transfiguring her face. I do, don't I, Arnold?
Not quite in the middle. Unfortunately, I had to move the statue back a little for the sake of the composition, you understand. Otherwise, it would have dominated it too much.
But the light of wonder and joy still shines on my face?
Yes, Irena, it does. In a way, that is, a little subdued, perhaps, to accord with the changed vision I had of life.
And this new image expresses life as you see it now, Arnold?
Yes, I suppose so.
And in this image, you've portrayed me as a background figure in a crowd?
No, no, not a background figure, no. At the worst, I'd call it a middle ground figure, or thereabouts.
Now you have pronounced judgment on yourself.
Judgment?
My whole soul, you and I, we,
We and our child were in that lonely figure.
Yes, but listen to how I've portrayed myself in this group. In the foreground, beside a spring, as it might be here, there sits a man weighed down by guilt. He cannot free himself from the earth's crust. I call him Remorse. Remorse for a forfeited life. He sits there, dipping his fingers in the rippling water to wash them clean. He's gnawed and tormented by the knowledge that he'll never, never succeed. He'll never in all eternity free himself and be granted resurrection. He must stay forever in his hell.
Poet.
Why, poet?
Because you're soft and self-indulgent and so ready to forgive all your own sins, everything you've ever done or thought. You killed my soul, and then you model yourself as a figure of penance and remorse. And in your eyes, that settles your account.
I'm an artist, Irena. I'm not ashamed of the frailty inherent in my nature. I was born to be an artist, you understand? I shall never be anything else.
You are a poet, Arnold. You dear, big, aging child. Can't you see it?
Why do you keep on calling me a poet?
Because there's something condoning in that word, my friend. It is a word that condones all sins and spreads a cloak over every weakness. But I was flesh and blood once. I too had a life to live and a human destiny to fulfill, but I turned my back on it all, threw it away to serve you. It was suicide. A mortal sin against myself, and that is a sin I can never expiate. I should have borne children into the world, many children, real children, not the sort that are hidden away in tombs. That should have been my calling. I should never have served you, poet.
But those were wonderful times we had, Irena. Miraculous, wonderful times, now that I look back.
Can you remember a little word you said to me when you'd finished? Finished with me and with your child. Do you remember that little word, Arnold?
Did I say something to you? You still remember
yes,
now?
Yes, you did. Can't you remember it any longer?
No, I can't say I do. Not at the moment, anyway.
You took both my hands and pressed them warmly. I stood there breathless, waiting. And then you said, I'm deeply grateful to you, Irena. This, you said, this has been an inspiring episode in my life.
Episode? That's not a word I'm in the habit of using.
Episode was the word you used.
Well, perhaps I may have. But, so it was, really, an episode.
Mm-hmm. At that word, I left you.
You take everything to a heart, so, Irena.
Yes, perhaps you're right. Let's forget these things of the heart. Look, Arnold. Look at the petals of this wild rose. I throw them onto the water of this stream, and they become birds. Our birds swimming.
What kind of birds are they?
Oh, can't you see they're flamingos? Red, like roses.
Flamingos don't swim. They only wave.
All right, they're not flamingos, then. They're gulls.
Oh, yes. Red-billed gulls, I expect. And if I throw these green leaves into the stream, they're ships. Ships I'm sending after them.
But there mustn't be any huntsmen on board.
No, there are no huntsmen on board. Do you remember that summer when we sat like this outside the little farmhouse? On the Taunitzer See.
On Saturday evenings, so when we'd finished our work for the week.
We went out there by train and stayed over till Sunday.
An episode, Arnold.
You made birds swim in the stream then, too. Water lilies.
White swans.
Yes, swans. And I remember I fastened a big hairy leaf to one of the swans. A dock leaf, wasn't it?
And it became Lohengrin's boat with a swan drawing it.
How you loved that game, Irena.
Oh, we played it so many times.
Every Saturday, I think. the whole summer through.
You said I was the swan who was drawing your boat.
Did I say that? Yeah, I may well have. Look, see how the gulls are swimming down the river, Irena?
And all your ships have run aground.
Ah, but I've plenty of ships in reserve. Irena, I bought that little farmhouse on the Taunitsa Zee.
Have you bought it? You often used to say you would if you could ever afford it.
Well, eventually I was able to, so I bought it.
Do you live out there now in our old house?
No, I had it pulled down long ago. Built myself a fine big villa in this place, with a park around it. That's where we... where I usually spend the summer.
So you and that other woman live out there now?
Yes, when my wife and I aren't traveling, as we are this year.
Beautiful, beautiful was life on the Taunitsa Zee.
And yet, you're there now.
And yet, we let all that beauty slip from our grasp.
Is it too late to find it again?
Look, Arnold. The sun is setting behind the mountains. See how redly it shines on all the heather.
It's a long time since I watched the sun set on the mountains.
Or the sunrise?
Don't think I've ever seen the sunrise.
I once saw a miraculously beautiful sunrise.
Did you? Where was that?
High, high up on a dizzy mountaintop. You enticed me up there and promised me you'd show me all the glory of the world.
If... well?
I did as you told me. Followed you to the mountain top. And there I fell on my knees and worshipped you and served you. Then I saw the sunrise.
Would you like to come and live with us in the villa down there?
With you and that other woman?
With me. As in the days when we created together. You can unfasten all the locks that have snapped shut inside me. Will you, Irena?
No. I haven't the key any longer, Arnold.
You have the key. You're the only one that has it. Help me to start living again.
Empty dreams. Idle, dead dreams. Our life together cannot be resurrected.
Then let's go on with our game.
Our game, yes. Let us get on with our game.
Well, here comes little Maya and her bear beta.
You're a lady, yes.
Or his.
Good night, Professor. Dream about me. I'm going off on an adventure.
In quest of what?
Life. Real life. No substitute.
You too, Maya, dear.
Yes. I made up a song about it. It goes like this. I am free. I am free. I am free. No longer imprisoned. I'm free. I can fly like a bird. And I'm free. Yes. I believe I've awoken at last.
It sounds like it.
Oh, how heavenly it feels to be awake.
Good night, Maya, and good luck to you.
Don't say it. We don't want any of your goddamn blessings. Can't you see we're going hunting?
What will you bring me home from the hunt, Maya?
I'll bring back a fine hawk for you to model. I'll wing one for you.
Yes, winging birds is rather in your line, isn't it?
Just let me take care of my own life from now on, Goodbye. Have a nice, quiet summer night on the mountains.
Thank you. And damn bad luck to you both and to your hunting.
Now, that's the kind of blessing I like to hear.
Thank you. Thank you, Professor.
Summer night on the mountain. Yes, that would have been life.
Would you like to spend a summer night on the mountain with me?
Yes, yes. Come.
My love. My lord and master.
Oh, Irena.
It will be an episode. Shh. Don't look round. Arnold.
What is it?
There's a face staring at me.
Where?
keeper, your guardian in black.
We must part now. No, don't move. Do as I say. You mustn't come with me. We'll meet tonight on the mountain.
Will you come, Irina?
Yes, I shall come. Wait for me here.
Summer night on the mud with you. Oh, Irina, that could have been our life. And we have wasted it.
We only learn what we've lost when...
When?
When we dead awaken.
What do we learn then?
We learn that we have never lived. I must go now.
I am free, I am free, no longer in prison. I'm free, I can fly like a bird and I'm free.
A wild, broken mountaintop with a sheer precipice behind. Snowy peaks tower up, losing themselves in drifting mist. On a scree stands an old, tumble-down hut. It is early morning. Dawn is breaking. The sun has not yet risen.
Let me go. Let me go, I tell you.
Stella, now, you'll be biting me next. Oh, you're as snappish as a vixen.
Let me go, I say. Try to behave yourself.
I'm damned if I will.
Then I won't go a step further with you. Come here, not one step.
How do you think you'll escape from me up here, eh?
I'll run down there if need be.
And smash yourself into dog's meat. A fine, savoury blood pudding you'd make. All right, go ahead. Oh. Run down the mountainside if you want to. It's as sheer as a wall. There's only one narrow path down, and that's as near as damn it impossible.
Oh, you're a fine one to go hunting with.
That's all in the sport.
You call this sport, do you?
Yes, my fine lady. The kind of sport I like best.
Well, I must say. Why did you let the hounds loose up there?
To give them the chance to hunt a little on their own, too.
That's quite untrue. It wasn't for their sake you let them loose.
Well, why did I then? Tell me.
Because you wanted to be rid of Lars. You told him to run after them and catch them. And meanwhile...
And meanwhile?
Never mind.
Lars won't find them. You don't need to worry about that. He won't come back before he's time.
No, I'm sure he won't.
Lars knows my hunting habits, you see.
Do you know what you're like, Squire Oldham?
I'm like myself.
You're exactly like a fawn.
A fawn? Isn't that some kind of a monster, a wood demon or something?
Yes, just like you. With a beard like a goat and legs like a goat. Yes, and horns, too.
By Jove, horns, too.
A pair of beastly horns, just like you.
Why, can you see my poor little beard?
Yes, quite plainly.
I'd better tie you up, then.
Have you gone mad? Tie me up?
If I'm a monster, I might as well play the part properly. So that's the way of it. You can see my horns,
now,
can you?
Now, please, try and behave yourself, Squire Ulfheim. But Where's this hunting lodge of yours you were talking so much about? You said it was around here somewhere.
There it is, right in front of your eye.
That old pigsty?
It's housed more than one princess in its time.
Was it there that horrid man you told me about went into the princess disguised as a bear?
Yes, my fair huntress, this was the very place. If it should please you to step inside.
Ugh. Set foot in that place. Ugh.
Oh, two people can while away a summer night very comfortably in there. Or a whole summer, for that matter.
Thank you. I've no taste for that kind of thing. Well, I'm tired of you and your hunting expedition. I'm going down to the hotel before people wake up.
How do you suppose you're going to do that?
Well, that's your business. There must be a way down somewhere.
Bless you, yes, there's a way down. Over there.
You see, you can be a gentleman when you want to.
Just you try it.
Don't you think I dare?
You wouldn't have a chance. Unless I help you.
Well, come and help me then. What else are you here for?
How would you rather I carried you? On my back?
Oh, don't be ridiculous.
Or in my arms?
For heaven's sake, don't start that nonsense again.
I did that to a young girl once. Picked her up out of the gutter and carried her away in my arms. Carried her on my hands. I'd have carried her right through life like that so that she shouldn't hurt her pretty foot against a stone. Her shoes were worn to shreds when I found her.
And yet you picked her up and carried her on your hand.
Lifted her up out of the mire and carried her as high and gently as I knew how. Do you know what thanks she gave me?
No, what?
She gave me horns. The ones you can see so clearly. Isn't that a funny story?
Oh, yes, quite funny. But I know one which is even funnier.
What's that?
Once upon a time, there was a little girl. She had a father and mother, but they were very poor. One day, a great and powerful man appeared in their poor little house and picked the girl up in his arms, just like you, and carried her far, far away.
Wanted to live like he did, eh?
Yes. She was stupid, you see.
And he was tall and handsome, no doubt?
No, he wasn't so terribly handsome. But he made her believe he was going to take her up to the top of the highest mountain, where the sun would always shine.
He was a mountaineer, was he?
Yes, in his way.
So he took the wench up with him?
Took her up with him. Oh, yes. No. He led her into a cold, damp cage, which the sun and the fresh air never reached, or so it seemed to her. Though the walls were gilded, they were lined with great stone ghosts.
Serve her right, damn it.
Yes, serve her right. It's a funny story, though, isn't it?
Well, look, now, listen to me.
Well, what is it now?
Why don't we two stitch our tattered lives together?
Oh, is the squire turning poor man's tailor?
Yes, couldn't we try to draw the rags together here and there so as to patch some kind of a life out of them?
And when those poor rags have quite worn out, what then?
And we shall stand there free and unashamed. Ourselves as we really are.
You with your goat's legs.
And you with your... Well, let that pass.
Come on, let's go.
Where to?
Down to the hotel, of course.
And then?
Then I shall bid you a polite farewell and say, thank you, sir, for the pleasure of your company.
I can offer you a castle.
Like that pigsty.
It hasn't fallen down yet.
And all the glory of the world.
A castle, I said.
Thank you, I've had enough of castles.
With splendid hunting grounds for miles around.
Is it full of great works of art, this castle of yours?
I can't offer you any of those.
I'm glad to hear it.
Then, will you come with me?
There's a tame bird of prey which keeps guard over me.
We'll wing him, Maya.
Come and carry me down this path, then.
Yes, it's time we went. The mist is on it.
Is it very dangerous, the way down?
Not as dangerous as a mountain mist.
I can see.
Does it make you giddy to look over the edge there?
Yes, it does. But look down there. Those two climbing up.
It's only your bird of prey. And his strange lady.
Can't we get down without their seeing us?
Impossible. The path's too narrow and there's no other way down.
Oh, well, let's face them here, then.
Spoken like a true bear-baiter.
Hello, Maya. So we meet again.
At your service. Come right up, both of you.
Ah, so you've been on the mountain all night too, like us.
Yes, I've been hunting, with your permission.
Have you come up that path?
As you see.
The strange lady too?
Yes, of course. The strange lady and I will not be going separate ways anymore.
Don't you know that this path you've just climbed is a death trap?
We tried it anyway. It didn't look too difficult at first.
Nothing looks difficult at first. But then you come to a tight corner where you can't go on or turn back and you're stuck there fast, Professor. Fast as a rock.
Are these meant to be words of wisdom, Squire?
Words of wisdom be damned. Look up there at the peaks. Can't you see the storm's about to break? Don't you hear the wind rising?
It sounds like the prelude to the day of resurrection.
It's the wind blowing from the mountain, man. Look how the clouds are heaving and sinking. They'll be all round us soon like a winding sheet.
Winding sheet. I know that feeling. Let's go down quickly.
I can't take more than one. Get into that hut, the pair of you, and stay there till the storm's passed. Then I'll send men up to fetch you down.
To fetch us? No, no.
Take you down by force, if need be. This is a matter of life and death. Now you know. Come on now, you, Maya. Don't be afraid. Trust me.
Get me down. Get me safely down.
You wait in the hut till they come with the ropes to fetch you.
Did you hear that, Arnold? They're coming up here to fetch me. Men coming here.
Be calm, Irena.
And she, the one in black, she'll come, too. She must have missed me long ago by now. She'll take hold of my arms, Arnold, and put me in the straitjacket. She's got it with her in the trunk. I've seen it.
No one will be allowed to touch you.
Oh, no, I have a way to stop them.
What do you mean?
This.
A knife?
Always, always, day and night, in bed.
Give me the knife, Irena.
I meant it for you, Arnold.
For me?
As we were sitting there last night, down by the Taunitzer's Eh.
The Taunitzer...
Outside the farmhouse, playing at swans and water lilies.
Go on.
I heard you say, clear as ice, cold as the grave, that I was only an episode in your life.
You said that, Irena, not I.
I took out my knife. I was going to stick it in your back.
Why didn't you?
I suddenly realized you were already dead. You'd been dead for years.
Dead?
Dead, like me. We sat there by the Taunitzer See, two clammy corpses playing our little game together.
I don't call that death.
Then where is the burning passion you fought against when I stood naked before you as the woman rising from the dead?
Our love is not dead, Irena.
The love which belongs to our life on earth. Oh, that beautiful, miraculous life is so full of riddles. That love is dead in us both.
I tell you, that love burns as passionately in me now as ever it did.
And I... Have you forgotten who I am now?
Whoever you are, whatever you are, to me you are only the woman I see in my dreams of you.
Too late. Too late.
We are free. There's still time for us to live, Irena.
The desire to live died in me, Arnold. Now I'm risen from the dead and look for you and find you. And see that you are dead. And life is dead, as I have been.
No, you're wrong, wrong. Both in us and around us, life rages as fiercely and as joyously as ever.
No. No, the woman whom you created, rising from the dead, sees life cold and lying on its bier.
Let me put my arms around you. There. Let us two dead people live life to the full for one short hour before going down again into our graves.
On.
But not here in this half darkness. Not here with this hideous dank shroud flapping around us.
No, no, up into the light where glory shines. Up to the promised mountaintop.
Up there we shall celebrate our wedding feast, Irena, my beloved.
The sun may look on us, Arnold.
All the powers of light may look on us, and all the powers of darkness, too. Will you come with me now, my bride of grace?
Freely and willingly, my lord and master.
First, we must pass through the mists, Irena. And then...
Yes, through the mists. And then up, up to the top of our tower, where it shines in the sunrise.
In black, who has seen their end, makes the sign of the cross in the air before her.
Peace be with you, both.
In When We Dead Awaken, by Henrik Ibsen, Ralph Richardson played the part of Arnold Rubeck, and Irene Wirth, that of Irena, a lady traveler. Barbara Jefford played the part of Maya, and Gordon Jackson, Squire Ulfheim. The inspector at the Spa Hotel was played by James Thomason, the nun by Griselda Harvey, and the scenes were set by Charles Simon. The play was translated from the Norwegian by Michael Mayer, and the music was composed by John Baker at the BBC Radiophonic Workshop. The play was produced by John Tiedemann.